welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have a show dealing again with metaphysics and spirituality and science and physics and all kinds of interesting subjects. And I thought we would talk about developing mental truth, because people ask me frequently, well, how do I develop my mental thought processes so that I can determine what is truth, what is not truth, so I think better, so I can have clarity of thought, and I mostly do not think in illusion, which I'm going to talk about what I mean by that. So I thought I would bring that in today. Now, if you want to call in, you can, of course, and the numbers are on the website, so you just use one of those numbers, depending upon where you are. There are a couple 800 numbers up there. And please do. I would love to hear from those of you who have something to say. Now, let me go into this idea, because I think it's really something that is, we'll say, a hot topic. It's based upon a lot of the problems we're facing today as well. And that is that in our world today, we have a major difficulty with egotism and arrogance. I think you all know kind of what that is. And we have a problem with people thinking that their way of thinking is always right, and others' ways of thinking sometimes are frequently wrong. And there's a tendency for people to be closed-minded. Now, what is closed-minded? What do I mean by that? I mean that when we are using the part of ourselves that I'll call the mental part, and what is mental? Mental means that we are able to think in the past, present, and future pretty much around the same time, and we're able to deduce based upon using those three parts of time whether or not something is both reasonable, logical, and eventually whether it is true. Now, I'll explain what all those things mean in a few minutes. So that's what I'm talking about, mental. There's other kinds of thinking. There's like creative imagination. That's thinking with your astral body instead of your manasic or mental body. When you think astrally, you just get pictures of things. It's fantasies, or depending upon what you might want to call it, it's imagination. And that type of thinking is great if you just want to have, we'll say, a kind of picture of something in the present and somewhat related on what you've experienced in the past. But it doesn't really tell you outcomes. It doesn't give you an idea of what's going to likely occur in the future. And if you think about that, you would see why that's the case. If you think in creative imagination, you can see how that works. Fantasies, unfortunately, have a great drawback. And that is that they don't have to fit the laws of the universe. I'm talking about the natural laws. I'm not talking like laws of some code or something. They don't fit the necessary requirements that whatever the fantasy is about could actually become reality. So they don't become an illusion breaker. They don't get rid of illusions. They can stimulate and produce more of them. And oftentimes they come from our desires. That's what's wrong with that type of thinking. And then there's this mental thinking, which requires both some degree of logic. Well, what is logic? Logic means that sequentially, from the past to the present to the future in our thinking, each step of the way, there's not a contradiction. So in other words, what you did in the past is supported by what you're doing in the present, which is supported by what you're thinking about doing in the future. And they don't contradict each other. That's logic. That's what logic is about. Logic also deals with forms. So it isn't so much about concepts as it is about the forms or examples of concepts that take place. So when people say, well, I'm being logical, well, they're really saying that the ways that they conclude their concepts taking some type of form in an example, the example that they're saying, isn't contradictory. That's what they're saying. They're saying they're being logical. But it doesn't mean their original concepts are valid. A person could be completely logical in their thinking and totally fallacious, totally wrong in what they conclude, because the concepts they're using may not be hold up, even though the examples of those concepts make perfect sense when they're put together. Everything seems to flow okay. And there's a thing called a tautology where you can create whole bunches of logical things, that logical statements to yourself and others, that don't prove out to be true. And even concepts, if they're very, very shallow and short concepts, could be fallacious as well. So you can have even a concept could be wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right because it's a concept. But the concept is like a moving picture of a formula that applies to a whole bunch of examples. Whole bunch. And if it's a really truthful or complete concept, it applies to every example you can think of without contradiction. Those are hard to come by. They are really hard to come by. And, you know, the interesting thing is that very few people think in whole concepts. As a matter of fact, I would say if we were to divide up the number of people in our world today, most people don't think in concepts at all, as a rule. I'm not saying they don't ever, but I'm talking about as a rule, on like a daily basis, they tend to not think in concepts. Most people, like over half of the people in the world today, still don't think using concepts. Oh, that's kind of scary. And worse than that, some of those people that don't think in concepts that are completed think in concepts that are very incomplete, if they think in any concepts, if and when they do. And that's very dangerous, because an incomplete concept can lead to completely wrong understandings of how and why things exist. Let me give you an example of that, because now I'm talking about in concepts, about concepts, and that can really confuse people. You know, it was, if we go back in time, everybody knows these stories. People used to think the Earth was flat. Kind of made sense, because how could you be on a round planet? Because you would fall off. Everybody could see that if you took a ball of something and you put something on the sides or the bottom of it, it would just fall off. So they said, well, if you had people on another side of a big planet like Earth, they would just fall off. So obviously the planet can't be a sphere. It would have to be flat. So the people who believed in that did so because they believed in a wrong concept. Their concept was incomplete. Their concept was that in every case of a sphere, something would fall off of it if you put something to rest on it. And, of course, what they didn't understand is as the sphere gets larger and larger and larger, it develops a greater and greater force called gravity, which equally holds everything from all directions on its sides in every possible way. It's pulling whatever is on it, us included, equally. So the people on one side of the sphere are equally drawn to the center of that sphere, as are the people of the other side. And then it's explained how we can all be on a sphere and not some of us falling off. But you see how a wrong concept, a very limited concept, can lead to some very bad ideas. And so the examples of this, people develop thought forms, examples of what Earth was like, and they decided that, you know, everybody's living on a turtle that's kind of walking around. I mean, there's a lot of different examples, right? And we're on the back of a turtle that's kind of crawling through something, I don't know, the etheric realm or whatever. And if we go too far, we'll just fall off. So that created a real big problem, because then a number of relatively adventurous people became too afraid to travel beyond what they could see as the horizon, thinking that if they go too far, they might just fall off the Earth. And that always seemed like a bad thing to do. Now, you can see how this leads to tremendous misnomers and misunderstandings that can be generalized into people's thinking. All of those generalized misnomers are what I call illusion. Now, illusion is the inability to have a high enough consciousness. In other words, the ability to put two and two together, the ability to combine together concepts to see more and more of the truth. So if you can't do that, then you're in illusion. And instead of seeing more and more of the truth, you see less and less of it as you build your thinking. So people came to the conclusion that you would fall off of a ball, a sphere. Think of a big beach ball or something like that, because they didn't have beach balls back then. But it's like a giant ball of some sort. And they then extrapolated that into all these other concerns that eventually led to the restriction of exploring our planet, to the fear of doing a number of exploratory activities, and to the eventual belief that there was an end to the spatial dimensions that we lived in, which meant as well that there had to be some kind of, we'll say, beginning and end to almost every other element of existence. So it went from a very small thing about a ball that somebody holds in their hand and something falls off of it, to the ontology of all existence being affected by people thinking that the Earth has to be flat and that you can't have a sphere that people can live on. So you can see how this can contaminate a whole bunch of other stuff, and it built many illusions in people. It had an effect on people's ways of relating to spirit and God, as weird as that sounds. So the simplest of things can lead to dramatic and large, full-scale illusions that have profound effects on the way that we each live. Now, today, luckily, most people don't believe the Earth is flat anymore. But that isn't the biggest problem in our nature. After all, we've gone to the moon, we've gone all over the place. So people have dropped that idea. People know the Earth is spherical if they live virtually anywhere in our world, because almost everybody has seen part of our planet from taking pictures from outer space, and everybody agrees, yep, the Earth is spherical. Some people still don't understand the concept of gravity, though. If you ask many people, I'm not saying everybody, but if you ask a lot of people and you say, well, how come people, in Australia aren't slipping off? We're up here, they're down there. Of course, to them, we're down here, they're up there, maybe. I don't know. Although they usually say down under, so I guess maybe they don't think that way. But nonetheless, how come they aren't? And most people will say, well, because there's gravity. But they don't understand what the full concept of gravity is, and that it's a force that is enacted from the very center of the planet towards itself in all directions equally. And it works that way. And the reason the Earth is a sphere, and the reason most bodies that have significant gravity are spheres, if they don't have enough gravity, they can't become a sphere, but because most bodies that have a lot of gravity do become spheres, is because this force is equal, and it keeps pushing and pushing and pulling on itself until things melt together through heat, and the result is usually a spherical type of body. However, there's a size thing. As a matter of fact, most things that are much smaller than our moon, like less than half the size of our moon, are not going to necessarily become a sphere, because the gravity of that kind of body, like a large asteroid, is too small to become a sphere. Another thing that works on spheres is that if they're spinning or not, and we're spinning. And that also adds to the effect, we'll say, of maintaining a spherical shape. That adds to the gravity effect. So the whole thing kind of fits together, but most people wouldn't be able to tell you what I just told you. They would just say, well, it's something to do with gravity, I don't know what that's about, and who cares? But you see, if you don't understand those things, then you may not be able to understand bigger kinds of concepts. Such as, well, if this is the way the universe works in general, and it seems to allow the universe to stick together and there to be the eventual development of life. You can actually show that it's very difficult to develop life on an asteroid because it isn't spherical and there's a lot of issues about it. Then you start saying to yourself, well, wait a second. This sort of suggests that there might be a creative thought involved in even the construction of gravity and the construction of the way planets form themselves and all kinds of things. In other words, there's something here that suggests that. But if a person doesn't have the ability to grasp the concept of what gravity is about, they may never come to that conclusion. So one of the things, again, that we see about illusion in general is that when people have it, they have a hard time seeing God. They have a hard time seeing spirit. They have a hard time seeing the more hidden side or esoteric side of existence. And this makes them more closed-minded, and it reduces their contact with their soul and their contact with other people as souls and their ability to grow their consciousness. Do you see what I'm getting at? So I'm not here trying to get you all to learn about gravity or anything else like that. I'm trying to help in this show to expose why it's so important for us to develop, particularly at this point, our mental thinking in a way which is both more truthful, that involves whole concepts that are as large as we possibly can, and it isn't closed-minded. Because if we can change that, we can change a lot of things that are wrong in our world today. And I'll explain more about that right now. You see, if we look at what's really happening in the darker parts of the world particularly, such as Iran, North Korea, I mean, all these things are in the news, right? And I've talked about them recently. The problems have to do with there being the illusion covering up the darkness. The illusion oftentimes is false concepts, small concepts about life and God and government and countries. All these things are distorted in truth. And the big picture, like might be in our own Declaration of Independence and Constitution within the United States at least, I realize there's a number of listeners aren't listening to me from the U.S. right now, but still, most of you know something about us. And you see, our concepts hold us together. And regardless of how we may stray in illusion, those concepts keep bringing us back to a stronger sense of what it means to be free, what it means that we are endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights, and that those rights are reserved by us and cannot be removed from us by a government, by force, or by any other means in any way that is permanent. Now, you notice I said permanent. You could temporarily come in and lock me up, you can chain me, you can do whatever, but you can't remove in a permanent way those rights, because they are permanently and inalienably part of me. So the only way you could theoretically get rid of them is to kill me, but in killing me, you also free me to go in another dimension of time and space where you can't get to me anymore. So ultimately, this is the concepts we live by, and what's missing in the places that are dark in our world, the places that we have the most trouble with right now, we being those of us in the freer parts of the world, is that those places are missing the whole picture. They're missing the big concept. And not enough of the population is living outside of the bigger illusion that is created by the darkness. The dark people are creating, encouraging the creation of the illusion. They also are empowering other dark people to carry out the lies and to produce a kind of propagandist untruth, that is their untruth that they're going to inculcate into usually younger people, but eventually everyone they can, through either force, if necessary, or intimidation and fear. But most of the time, believe it or not, it isn't that. It's through incomplete thinking. It's through the thing we're talking about today, developing untruth instead of truth in their populations. As long as that untruth exists, they can control the people. When the untruth begins to go away and more truth is developed and the illusions start moving away, no government that is destructive, dictatorial, unconscionably destructive, all those things to their people, can survive. It can't survive because the people become liberated by their own minds. Liberation must start in the mind and then move to the heart. If it doesn't do it in that way, then it can't survive. My opinion, by the way, this is an aside, but I thought I'd throw it out there, is at the present time, liberation exists more in the hearts of the Iranian people than it does in their minds. And they need to clear their minds in order to develop correct leaders and leadership abilities, plus the ability to follow a leader of such a nature. Then their heart will become even stronger than it has been. If it just develops in the heart, it cannot be maintained there, because there's still too much illusion in the minds, and then the people do not recognize who they really are, and they won't stand up to the tremendous pressures put on by the darkness. Okay, so that's just my thought. I throw that in. I realize that's off the subject, but I always, you know me, I like to digress. Hey, why not? Part of understanding truth, this is a great segue now, part of understanding the truth is the ability to connect things that are not similar, to see the dissimilarity and be able to connect that dissimilarity into something that's bigger so it now is similar. That's a very big part of developing mental truth. And one of the exercises that I'm going to talk about before we go to break right now is in doing exactly that thing. Most people do not challenge their own mental thinking, and this is the reason they don't grow. I'm asked so many times, I don't know, countless times, well, how do I develop this in myself? I want a meditative thing. Do I sit and do an om or om? And how about listening to native Indian drums beating? Or no, none of those things are going to do much for you in developing mental truth. That's my opinion. I'm not saying that some people maybe haven't found that to be the way for them, but I don't think on an average that's the way to go about it. I'm suggesting that the first thing to do is to start to challenge your own thinking about almost anything and everything that you experience that is counter to your own thought. The reason for this is you develop something called humility in the process of doing that very activity. The humility allows us to assume that others are right and we're wrong, so we can learn from them, and we can also determine their truth, or lack thereof. Doesn't mean we assume everybody's right in the long run. We only assume it at the moment when their thought is contradictory to ours. We'll look at theirs first and see whether or not that they have a better understanding, more consciousness than we do. If they do, that's great. And if they don't, well, then maybe we can share with them how they can improve, you see, provided they're open to that idea. All right, so the first issue is to be humble and to look at other sides of issues that we think we might even be right about or have thought we were right about. And assume for a while, maybe we're not right. Let's see what happens if we go down that road and think about it. Almost every issue that people think that they are very, very, very right about, they're in illusion about. Now you're going to say, oh, come on. I know some things are just absolutely true and it's ridiculous. No. What I'm suggesting is this. We're very limited beings as human beings. And our understandings of what is really, really right is based upon a really, really small understanding. And outside of that smallness in our consciousness, there are such vast differences and increased understandings that we almost always are wrong in some way. And that's the thing that really is the way you develop humility, is to get that through you, is to really accept that that is probably true in almost every circumstance. Then, instead of looking at situations as what is known as the pair of opposites, that just means that there's two sides where each side thinks they're absolutely know that it's right in any thought process, and neither one of them are right. They're both almost equally wrong, and there's some other way. Now, some people say, well, isn't that the third way, the middle path, like Buddha talked about? Something like that. I don't want you to think that it's not, but this is a little more than maybe was originally intended in that statement. And so what I'm suggesting is that this, to be really a person who's going to develop more mental truth, you've got to first challenge your own truths by saying, well, you know, whatever I've come up with cannot be anywhere near an explanation of how everything really is, because I am so small in who and what I am. No matter what, I don't care if you won 20 Nobel Prizes, of course nobody's ever done that, or anything like that. It won't make any difference. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. The spectrum is so vastly off the charts that people really don't have a clear understanding of almost anything. That no matter how much you think you know, you think you are conscious of, etc., than others, you're really just a minuscule amount difference in comparison, because the universe is so vast and there's so much we have yet to understand. That is the greatest attitude to adopt if you're going to proceed in developing truth. Truth, again, are large whole concepts that no matter what example you throw at them, it fits. Wow. So there aren't these huge exceptions like, oh, well, there's dark matter, and there's dark energy, and there's this and that. No, truth is this, no matter what, it explains the example. The concept works. And if you got that going for you, then you're really in business. That's the first place that you're looking to get to, is to develop concepts large enough that they fit all the examples that you come across. So does that mean that truth is the ultimate truth? No. Because remember, no matter how far we go, our truths are never going to be large enough to fit everything that is out there, because our consciousnesses are still too small to include the truths that go beyond even mental thought. Right now we're only dealing with mental kind of truths. Remember, developing mental truth, that's what today's show is about. There's actually other kinds of truth that have other dimensionality to them. It's too complicated to get into right now, and we're not dealing with that in today's show. But nonetheless, I do want you to realize there's something even beyond what I'm going to be covering in today's show. Okay, so what we now got the very basis. We've reached the beginning of where we want to be. So from this point, we will cover much more in the next segment. And when we come back, I want to tell you about something that's kind of like an extension of our commercials. I'm just going to tell you something about something that I'm involved in, and hopefully you'll be interested in that. But we are going to go to commercial right now, and we will be back.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about developing mental truth. That's what the show is about. And before we get more into that, which I'm going to give a lot more, you know, like, as people say, well, now give us the example, the down-to-earth stuff, like do this, do that. I will do that. I will. But before I do, I wanted to kind of give you a little idea of some of the things that I and some others are involved in. And one of them has been to test out various formulas using a thing called resveratrol. I'm going to say again, resveratrol. That's the stuff everybody associates to be, you know, some component of grapes, but it actually comes more these days from another kind of a plant called a knotweed, whatever that is. And it's a Japanese plant. And at any rate, it's the same stuff, but it's easier to get in a lot less money, and it's actually more potent from that source than from grapes. But you can get it from grapes, you just have to use a lot of grapes. And what it's supposed to do, I mean, what it's, you know, what it is touted by some people as doing is it's supposed to make you younger and keep you younger, keep you young. And it does, I mean, just generalizing, because it does a lot of other things. And the question was, well, okay, let's try different products and see how they work, and let's see if we can come up with one that works better and find out why these other ones aren't, some aren't, weren't working, and some work better than others, et cetera. Examining both literature and also messing with the stuff. And this has been going on for quite, you know, we've been doing this for like 6 months now. So where have we come from? What have we come up with? Well, the first thing is that most of the stuff that's out there, and I don't care if you're going to Oprah's website or wherever, and you're, oh, yeah, I'll buy this one or whatever. Most of the stuff out there doesn't work very well. There are problems. Some of it is just plain not strong enough, and it doesn't produce very much in your blood to do anything with after you ingest it. And others are create some, you know, not so pleasant effects from it. I mean, they might do something helpful, but they have, you know, not great results for some people. I tried some that were like that. I didn't care for them at all, and so did some other people. Now, so we came up with what was really going on, and we produced a formula that we then started to test with. And I say we, that's me and other people, okay, tested this out and came up with something that I'm telling you it really works, at least as far as people have tried it. And what do I mean by work? Well, you know, it seems to make you younger in a number of different ways. From appearance and the way you feel, and the quality of your physical body and somewhat your senses, and all these things seem to be improving, going back in time, you might say. And that's a good thing for most of us. You know, a lot of people prefer, it's not necessarily how long you live, but what quality of life, but both seem to be improved through this resveratrol product. And I'm not going to go into the complicated things about it, because that would take a whole show or more. But you can actually read about this. There's places you can go on the internet and check it out, and you get the information. And we came up with two products, one for people, which is the ones we've been using for ourselves, but we also came up with one for animals, specifically dogs and cats. We don't have enough resources to try anything other than dogs and cats. See if they have rabbits or ferrets or whatever. I can't guarantee what's going to happen if you gave it to them. But for dogs and cats, this stuff really is remarkable. And it's more effective in a faster way, seemingly, on the dogs and cats than it is on us. We're more complex, you know, we're bigger in some cases. And so it just takes, you know, it seems like it works better. So, you know, like we have one dog that, she's getting on, pretty old dog, and she had a lot of gray hair, you know, like she's a 12-and-a-half-year-old Basenji. And, you know, they don't live a lot longer than that, actually. Their life expectancy isn't that much longer. And she was pretty gray in the face and kind of droopy-eyed, not looking like she was at the top of her game, right? Put her on this stuff, and in a couple months, gray hair's gone. Like, what happened to the gray hair? It's gone. Okay, well, that's a good sign, right? And then, you know, doesn't look as droopy. She's not as tired. She's more alert. She has a more youthful stride and way of movement. All of those things and that's not very long, because this is something that's normally people think about in terms of years of use. And here it is, months. And we've also received the same kind of results, but not quite as dramatic, among ourselves. And the older you are, the better it works. Now tell me something else that works that way. Now, most things don't work that way, right? The older you get, the worse they work, right? This is one of those rare things that if you're older, it works better. So, as a matter of fact, we don't recommend anybody under the age of 25 even mess with this stuff. Even if you're a weight builder, you know, a bodybuilder, it may improve muscle tone and all that stuff, but I think it's kind of not right for people who are relatively young to be messing with how this stuff changes the body. So I think anyone under 25 should probably wait till they get a little older before they start trying this stuff. And then even if you are 25, you should take a lot less of it than people who are older. At any rate, we came out with a product, and it's called Ideal Resveratrol, Ideal Cell Absorption Resveratrol. Just think of Ideal Resveratrol. And we made a company. It's called Forever Young Products. Has a snappy name. And if you're interested in it, you can go to the internet and just look up Forever Young Products, or you can call 800-777-7850. That was a kind of a long commercial, but it wasn't really just of a commercial. It was sort of like it wasn't even an infomercial. It was just more or less information. But at any rate, I hope you would think about this, because it's well worth the cost relative to the benefits. And it goes way beyond just a question of staying young. You may stay a lot healthier. And in some cases, it could even make a major difference for some kinds of things that people deal with. But again, we can't make claims. You know, there's a big brother that's always listening or thinking about listening. And so we're not going to make any claims about this. This is up to you to decide whether or not it's going to be something you want to try. But certainly you can go to, like, Oprah's website, and there's a whole bunch of, and Dr. Oz and all those other people, and check out and see what they say and what kind of results they're getting. And then let them make the claims, because they can afford the lawsuits. We can't. Okay? So let them do all the claiming, and we'll just make the best product possible. All right, so now we're back to this question of mental truth, developing mental truth. How can we develop more mental truth? And here are some exercises I'm going to suggest. This is a very interesting one. Try to find a third way between two polarized arguments, regardless of what side you're on or if you're on neither of them, in our society. I'll give you some examples. The question of whether or not abortion is a legitimate and reasonable private right for women to have, or whether society should have a concern for unborn fetuses that may become children, and try to prevent or limit abortions, one or both. These are all different conditions of different sides of this equation. And is there another way to examine this? Try to think of solutions. Now, these are really hard ones, because if you think about it, for decades or even longer, these have plagued our society in the United States and some other countries too. And it's something that it's worthwhile to consider. It doesn't mean you're going to find necessarily a true, quote-unquote, third way. There might not be, or there may be. But try to think of one. Like, you can change society with your thought. How would you construct things in a way that would try to ameliorate the tremendous gulf between these two different limited concepts? Because both sides, I will tell you this, in my opinion, both sides have dramatically wrong concepts about what they're doing. And if you can get to the bigger concept, and the bigger concept has to do with spirit and souls and how souls form and what they're doing, and you kind of almost have to include some things maybe like reincarnation and other issues in order to get to a bigger side of the truth. Remember, we're trying to develop something that will work for everything that we are aware of at the present time. That's what real truth is about. Truth does change as your awareness and consciousness grow. Truth can change, but the point is that at the present time, we're looking for the bigger concepts. And right now, most of the concepts that revolve around that specific issue are very narrow, very, very small concepts that unfortunately do not lead to truth on either side, and leads to this radicalized, arrogant method in some people, at least egotistical, and produces a lot of problems in thought. Okay, so that's one exercise. And do that daily for a new idea. So think of something new each day that is polarized, that is not, that there hasn't been a solution to, and yet, you're going to challenge yourself to see how you can come up with a bigger concept in order to deal with the problems in hand. Now, I've mentioned some problems on this show. I'm going to bring up some other ones as examples. Like, we have a problem with corruption in our government, and with the problem is that the people who want power by running for office and wanting to be part of the government are the people that should never be the ones in government. And so we constantly have a corrupted system, and this is somewhat based upon, all goes all the way back to Plato and a book they wrote called The Republic, and it really has to do with the concept that those who seek power are the ones that are most dangerous to have it. And those who don't seek power are the ones who never get it because they don't seek it. But see if you can come up with some solutions to that. Now, I had suggested, I came up with a show that just dealt with a simple proposition about maybe changing the way our government works over time, and make it into a more direct democratic system based upon the present technologies that we have, and eliminate most of the questions of having to have people represent us as in a republic. They become more advisors in most circumstances. That, to me, made more sense, and it was a lot bigger concept than the present one. The present one was developed, it was developed 300 years ago, right? That's a long time. 300 years ago, we didn't have the internet. People didn't think in large enough concepts to be able to even understand the complexities that typically a government has to deal with. That's not true anymore. We've all grown in our thinking. Most people are much better educated as well. And therefore they can be the captains of their own ship. They can help direct our government on a multi-vote basis, so everybody is deciding most of the things themselves. It doesn't have to be completely everything, because if people don't think, if the majority of people don't think that it's important to determine a certain issue, they just don't vote, and then it's left up to the representatives, just the way we have it today. Those people still are there. The rest of the time, they are just, as an example, nothing more than advisors. Those are the good ways of trying to solve a problem, you see, because it expands on the level of consciousness. That's the whole point of this exercise, is to expand upon the level of consciousness. The other thing I would suggest is, within your own life, to do daily accounting of the areas that you have been closed-minded in, where you presented your thought, or it doesn't have to be in an action, it's just in your own mind now. You presented your thought in a certain way versus someone else's without opening your mind to the fact that they could be right or there could be things wrong with your thought, period. And those things need to be accounted for each day. The best thing to do is to just start off doing it like in the morning and maybe a bit at night. You don't have to spend a lot of time on this, maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But try to go through those thoughts that you had during the day that were in conflict with someone else's and see where you maybe weren't open-minded. Now, it goes further than that. After you do this for a while, you really want to do it when it's happening eventually. You know, a lot of people say, well, I meditate all the time. But unfortunately, meditation doesn't change their response to their environment or make them more responsible. It's like you're always looking backwards and thinking about, well, yeah, I thought about it, and I reflected on it, and everything else. And even if you contemplate a future time when you might do it differently, if you don't act on that contemplation, when that time comes up, you're still not going anywhere with it. It is important to do contemplation after you get through the meditation of reflection. So reflection is going over where you could have done better, and contemplation is seeing yourself do better, planning out how you might do that, so you're prepared. But there's still the third step. The third step is in actually taking that activity and changing it when it occurs, which is the real stumble. That's where most people have the most difficulty, let's face it. It's very hard to change ourselves, particularly our thinking. Actually, it's much easier to change our behaviors. But to change how we think, that's so hard. That means when someone else at the moment is confronting us and saying, well, this is what I think, and you say, oh, I don't know, and your minds go off not even listening to them, and instead it's thinking about what you want to think is right, and that, you know, and you're just discounting everything they say. That is a huge mistake. A huge mistake. We all make it. I'm not saying that this isn't the most common thing that just about everybody's doing. I'm saying that we need to stop it. We need to change it so that we become open-minded so we can find more truth. Now, it does help to do the reflection and then some contemplation each day, because then we're better prepared and there's a better chance we'll catch ourselves when we're actually in the thick of the moment, when we're actually confronted with other people's thoughts that are different from our own. And so this is a critical element in the process. Another thing we can do, okay, I'm done with that one. I'm moving on to the next one. Hopefully you all got what I just said. Another thing we can do is try to improve our mental senses. Now, you might say, well, what in the heck is a mental sense? I know what a physical sense is, and I kind of a little bit know what an emotional sense is. That's when you kind of feel something about someone, coming from someone, or around you and from others. But some people kind of know what that is. But what in the heck is a mental sense? Because a mental sense sounds like something almost like science fiction. And actually, mental senses are just as real as physical and astral senses. The difference is that the mental sense is so incredibly subtle compared to our physical senses. If we lived at the present moment in full consciousness in the mental world, our mental senses would seem just as strong and real as our physical ones at the present moment. Just like you can hear my voice, you could hear my thoughts in the mental world. And behind my thoughts, you'd be able to, if you were open-minded, also see and experience the movement of my concept in structure, to be able to see how the structure of the concept affects the examples that I'm producing. And you'll be able to apply that concept directly by reading it from my own mind. That's what a mental sense is. A mental sense is amazing. It's more than just being able to be a mind reader in the lower sense of the word. Like I can, or I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking about the pink grapefruits. Yeah. Now, how about I'm thinking about how pink grapefruits are part of a system of development that human beings have perfected in their ability to master the agricultural and plant world, making things that are both better for them and better for others at the same time, and in some cases even improving the plants. It's an example of humans really becoming the civilization and vice versa. It's an example of the things that we can do that co-participate with our Creator. Those kinds of things have to do with pink grapefruit, don't they? But more than that, if you could pick all that up for me directly, think of how much more effective that would be in us communicating together. You would understand so much more about so much of what I experience and what God is like and what everything is like around you. You see, I'm running out of time here, and I just want to get this concept through because it's such a big thing. So mental senses are critical if we're going to really improve ourselves in terms of developing mental truth. But how do you improve the mental senses? Well, mental senses are destroyed or stifled by the process of egotism and arrogance. So every time that you break through an egotistical moment, a thought, where you're refusing to develop a thought different from your own, that's a definition. You refuse to change the way you have already thought about it. Then, at that point, you're damaging the senses that allows you to do exactly that, to pick up this other information from other people. You just can't even understand the thought of others when you're egotistical, because your thought interferes with it. And your sense is diminished each time you do it, so it's like catching a disease, and every time you have another symptom from it, the symptoms get worse. And they keep getting worse and getting worse and getting worse, and the only way you're going to make it better is to make a conscious decision mentally to change it and not allow yourself to think that your ways of thinking are the only things that matter or important or right. Okay? And you're doing this to try to improve your mental sense and helping others to do the same. Now, here's the real interesting part. The more that each of us practices some form of breaking through our own egotism and arrogance, the more it becomes easier for everybody else around us to do the same thing. You say, well, how could that be? Well, because we're all connected through our mental senses. We share each other's senses if we are open to each other's mental senses. Therefore, if we are damaging our senses, we're damaging everybody else's senses, because it's a shared sense. It isn't just my mental sense. It's our mental sense. So my thoughts are affecting your thoughts and affecting the way you sense my thoughts and your thoughts. And oh, you know what else? We're out of time. And I would love to go on further with this, because there's many other exercises I can tell you about. I hope this has given you a little bit of an idea of what developing mental truth is about. There's so much more. This is a huge subject, difficult to get done in less than an hour. Really tough. But nonetheless, we tried to make a stab at it today. I just want to mention that, I don't even have to tell you about this, because it's so far in the future. It's something we're doing in the middle of July, so I won't do that. But I do want to tell you that you can get to me, if you want, at thoughts@whylifeis.com. If you want to say something to me, just email me. And if you want to go to the website, this is the website of the spiritual group I'm a member of, you can go to agelesswisdom.com and just drop us a note or look around or whatever you want to do. And again, I'm going to tell you, it's forever, what is it? Forever Young Products. Somebody had to just tell me that because I wasn't even thinking about it. Forever Young Products. Go to Forever Young Products and look up the resveratrol. I think you're going to find it's helpful. Try it one time and see if it's worthwhile. And let other people know about it because there are a lot of other stuff out there. There's a lot of other products out there. As a matter of fact, too many. Almost none for animals, though. But there's a lot for people. Most of them are worthless. That's all I can tell you. But this one is not. This one will really help you. So think of that. We are definitely out of time. And listen, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.